Last month, the Shawnee Mission School District announced they would be putting laptops and tablets into the hands of all their staff and students. Shawnee Mission became the most recent and largest district to provide computers, and at a significant cost, $20 million. But how can these new tools be leveraged to improve education? And do they actually help students learn? Good morning, I'm Maria Carter, and today on Central Standard, we're going to look at how technology is changing teaching. Later in the hour, we'll explore the unfolding story in the West Bottoms over what to do with Kemper Arena. That, plus we get your initial responses to what lines you feel unite and divide our region in Tell KCUR. That's all ahead after the news. Last month, the Shawnee Mission School District announced it would give a laptop or an iPad to every student from kindergarten to graduation. That's some 27,000 students and more than 2,000 teachers and staff. The technology upgrades will cost $20 million. Shawnee Mission is the latest district in the Kansas City area to pursue this approach, following in the footsteps of Kansas City, Kansas, North Kansas City, Liberty, and others. But does it help students learn, and is it worth the cost? I'm Maria Carter, and today on Central Standard, we'll be exploring that. We welcome this morning John Rury. He's a professor of education and history at the University of Kansas. Good morning, John.
Good morning.
And also joining us here in studio is Jennifer Friend. She's an assistant dean at UMKC and an education professor studying technology.
Thank you for having me.
Well, does giving every kid a laptop or tablet lead to higher test scores? Jennifer?
There have been research studies that show that the one-to-one technology initiatives do help to improve standardized assessment scores, most importantly in areas of writing and literacy and science, but they're not seeing the same types of significant gains in the area of mathematics.
That's kind of curious to me. It seems like math might be built for computers and those sorts of tests and learning.
It may be that teaching math can still be done in a more traditional way, where students are just using their laptops, you know, to process the content and do traditional types of homework assignments rather than more inquiry or project-based learnings, which is the way that teaching is typically done in some of those other areas with technology.
And one of the big things you read about right now is the flipped classroom. Can you explain what that is, Jennifer?
The flipped classroom is where the instruction or the lecture is delivered online outside of class. So the students would take their laptops or their iPads home, and then the day before their class session, they would watch a brief lecture by the teacher. And then when they come to class the next day, they're going to be engaged in some type of an interactive learning activity where the teacher is more of a facilitator and they're available to answer questions as opposed to delivering a lecture during the class time and the students doing their homework after class.
And John Rury, you study the history of and education. Is this different than some of the other trends that have gone on over the years with, you know, maybe TV and other things?
Well, there's a long history of technology being touted as a big, boost to education performance. And historically, it just hasn't. There hasn't been a lot of evidence that that's the case. And computer technology, probably upwards of $20 billion has been invested in it in the last couple of decades.
Professor Rury, we're having a little bit of problem with your connection there.
Overall, scores haven't really changed very much as a consequence.
We're going to get
okay.
Professor Rury on the phone.
Because
you're dropping out on our end a little bit. So, and I don't want to miss what you're saying. But we'll go back to Jennifer Friend. How are computers different than maybe, you know, when I was a student, I know we had big old TVs that we would wheel into the classroom. And then later there was the Channel 1 that had the news in the morning.
I do. I remember that. And actually, I was a teacher in Shawnee Mission in those days. So I remember having, the film strip projectors and 16-millimeter films. As teachers, we used to have to be trained on how to use that equipment before we could graduate with our teaching degrees. But nowadays, teachers are required to take technology classes. And then as teachers, they engage in professional development to be able to integrate things like smart boards or to be able to use the laptops and iPads within the classroom in an effective way where it's fully integrated into instruction rather than just using those as a tool to continue more traditional types of learning activities where the student might be more passive as opposed to doing self-directed learning.
And when you talk about educating teachers about these things, what kind of, if someone is already a teacher, what kind of processes are going on for that?
Well, professional development has a strong impact on achieving the goals of something like a one-to-one initiative. So it's important that districts have a long-range plan for that professional development.
No problem.
Teachers, I think, have an opportunity to model lifelong learning because technology is constantly changing. So they can demonstrate to their students that they have an open mind and they're interested in learning more about new technologies. But teachers need to be able to not only use the technology, understand how that works, but they also have to have teaching skills. So how are they going to integrate that technology effectively into instruction in order to support learning?
And Professor Rury at KU, welcome back to the conversation.
Okay.
We left off and you were talking about kind of some of the history of different technologies and maybe how those hadn't panned out to be what had been promised.
Well, yeah, I mean, it goes all the way back to the 1920s, and radio was supposed to be a big revolution in education. It didn't really work out that way. And then it was going to be films, educational films were going to be a revolution, and that didn't have the impact everybody thought it would. And then education TV was touted as being the revolutionary development in the 50s and 60s. And then, of course, computers come into play in the 80s and 90s and thereafter. And we've had a huge investment, billions and billions of dollars. And at the national level, we really haven't seen a big improvement in achievement. So the jury is still out as far as the overall effect of this.
Now, if a school district were to come to you and say, we've got $20 million, should we invest that in computers? Would you advise them against it?
I would advise them to be cautious about it. I think what Dr. Friend just said a minute ago is really crucial. It's not the technology in itself, it's how it's used. And the big question is whether their instructional staff is really ready to employ that technology in a way that's going to have an impact on what students can do, in terms of their knowledge and skills.
So it still really comes down a lot to the teacher, it sounds like.
Absolutely.
Jennifer Friend, how do you get a teacher using the technology most effectively in the classroom? Do you have a real-world example you might share?
Well, we could look at the example of Shawnee Mission, where they are phasing in this one-to-one initiative starting in March by giving the administrators and the teachers the same technology, the laptops and the iPads that they're going to be giving to students starting when they return to school in the fall. So that gives the teachers and the administrators who are digital immigrants this opportunity to catch up with the students who are digital natives who may already be able to use this technology better than their teachers. And I think also Shawnee Mission is partnering with Apple to provide professional development. So having partnerships with technology companies is another way that you can help to prepare to phase in that one-to-one initiative. But the bottom line is that it's important to have a vision. So what is it that as a district or as a school you're trying to accomplish? Do you want to improve student achievement? Are you looking to promote greater equity, so all students have access to these technologies, developing 21st century workforce skills. There's a lot of different priorities that you might have, so it's important to communicate that vision with the teachers and administrators that are going to be working to implement it.
And often when you hear about technology in the classroom, it's for very, traditional subjects, not necessarily computer science or, training students to be designing the technology or going to the more basic, concepts of the technology.
And it is important that students are being thoughtful producers of, for example, internet content, or they're designing their own apps. I was visiting a charter school here in Kansas City, the KIPP Endeavor Academy, last year, and their computer science teacher was teaching the students how to program, how to design apps. The students were actually even able to sell those apps. I think there's a lot of capacity within students to be, you know, not only thoughtful consumers of internet content, but also producers of internet content, and to have an opportunity in schools to teach students how to be wise about that, how to practice netiquette or appropriate social skills, how to address cyberbullying. So some of those things that might become more prevalent with greater access to technology in schools is all part of the big picture of this type of initiative.
And John Rury, I was, you know, thinking back to my own childhood. Sesame Street was on, even if that wasn't something I necessarily watched in school. You know, that's part of the, I think, the educational TV. And, you know, while it might not have taught me to read, I was thinking it probably helped out along the way, gets you familiar with the letters and sounds. Is there an add-on bonus to some of the technology that's out there? You know, maybe it's not a teacher, but it helps students learn in some way?
Well, actually, there's some worrisome trends that we really have to be mindful of. And Dr. Fred said digital natives, well, most students are actually using digital technology as a communication tool, primarily on Facebook or connecting with friends or just sort of searching the web for things that they're interested in terms of their own peer culture or as consumers. There's research that says that indicates that when students use computers for inquiry, for actually exploring and learning, they tend to do it pretty superficially. They sort of look at the first one or two web pages till they hit on something like a Wikipedia article or something that somebody has posted, who knows who, and they sort of take that and then stop looking any further. It turns out to be very difficult to get students to break those habits. Sort of the technology, because of the ease with which people can access what seems to be useful information but may not be in many cases, students fall prey to all kinds of problems as a consequence. The technology, and the other thing is that it there seems to be a sort of a negative relationship between technology use and reading books, which is also problematic in the long run. So there's some big issues there.
Okay, well, Kansas City, we'd like to hear your thoughts. Does your kid use a laptop in or out of the classroom? Does it help them learn, or is it just a distraction? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888, or email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. And Professor Rury, how much of it is that, you know, I sit down at my computer at work, I get distracted by things like Facebook, Twitter, etc., that, you know, are students just not giving their full attention to schoolwork when they're at a computer?
It's a problem. And like I said, there are studies that show that you know, these kinds of distractions do have a negative effect on student performance if they're not monitored and sort of dealt with. Larry Cuban at Stanford is one of the big scholars and sort of critical observers of this. His book, which is published 5 or 6 years ago, it's a study actually of a school district in Silicon Valley, and the title sort of summarizes his point. The title of the book is Oversold and Underused in terms of the impact of computer technology on achievement in schools like that.
Well, Jennifer Fred, how are teachers being trained to, or are they being trained to, minimize that distraction if every student does have an iPad or a laptop in front of them and access to the internet?
Well, the school district does have filters that will work to block not only inappropriate content, but some schools or districts might block Facebook altogether. So while students are at school, they can't access that. I think also in terms of measuring the instructional quality, that there need to be measures of how effective the teaching with technology is. I agree with what Larry Cuban had talked about in his book, where you've got for example, a $20 million investment in equipment. Well, if your teachers are telling the students, you know, keep your laptop closed right now, I'm going to be delivering a lecture, and then they don't use those laptops during the class until maybe the last 10 minutes when they're just going to be typing up some answers to the questions at the end of the chapter, that's not really effective use of technology. But that's, again, the importance not only of the professional development, but then the evaluation of teaching practices to make sure that the technology is being utilized to its full potential.
Have there been any schools that have bought into technology and then decided, you know what, it wasn't worth it and kind of taken it out of the classroom?
I can't think of examples. I know that as with Shawnee Mission, they're phasing it in. So they're starting with high school students and starting with middle school students, and then elementary schools will be phased in at a later date. So sometimes I think districts will monitor and adjust their technology plans so that if they see something's not working, for example, or even infrastructure issues, like maybe the network storage is insufficient where students are trying to back up their files and the whole system will crash. And so there's a wisdom to taking it slowly so that you don't try to do too much at a time and then have to call the whole thing off because it just isn't working.
And Professor Rory, are there any more historical examples of, you know, just going back to the basics and giving up whatever the new technology of the day is?
Yeah, well, Education TV is a good example of that. There was enormous investment, particularly in the 1960s and early 70s, in educational TV. And of course, that has to be upgraded as the technology advances in that realm also. And by the mid-70s, it was largely abandoned. It's not really very effective. And, you know, sort of problematic in other ways, just in terms of maintaining those systems. So that's one example. I think my thinking is that computer technology is probably different because it has become so integral to the rest of the world in terms of the world of commerce and the academic world. It seems unlikely to me that you're going to have districts backing away or other educational organizations backing away from computer technology in the way that educational TV was dealt with.
Okay, well, let's go to one of our callers. We have Gene calling from Fairway. Good morning, Gene.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you for taking my call, and I'd really like to say hello to Dr. Friend. I worked with her at Mission Valley, the now closed Mission Valley, or I worked there when she was an administrator and a principal. She was a wonderful principal and administrator. Hello, Dr. Friend. I'm sure you're doing great at UMKC. But what I wanted to say is I think this is a great idea, introducing technology in the classroom, and I've worked on both sides, the Missouri and the Kansas side, in the classroom. However, the classroom itself has to change. The dynamic inside the regular classroom is the same one that I grew up with. I'm 64, and it was a teacher lecturing about the subject, one subject generally, and the whole class listening to that, and they don't learn like that anymore. The classroom has to be a lot more dynamic, multimedia presentation, maybe two teachers and an aide, different things going on, hands-on things going on, lecture things going on, but the formation of the classroom itself has to undergo a great change before even the computer themes or the technological themes will work. So thank you very much, and I'll listen off the air again.
Well, Jennifer Friend, can you talk a little bit about how, you know, what a new classroom that's really utilizing technology, you know, best practices looks like right now?
Well, it is evolving constantly, and I think that when you look at what some studies have found about one-to-one computing initiatives, they show that it encourages student-centered learning, and it increases student engagement and satisfaction with school. So some of those things that Gene was talking about, where students might be off task or disengaged or unmotivated, having the access to technology and having it integrated with the learning can help to be a motivational factor. There's also been studies that have shown that it decreases discipline issues and can improve attendance when you've got a one-to-one initiative that's working effectively.
Kansas City, if you'd like to weigh in on education and technology and how it's being used in the classroom, please give us a call, 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. 235-2888, or you can email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. Gabby did just that, and she wrote, "I used to be for this, but now we have to use the computer as a privilege to be earned. If his school, I assume her son's school, gave him a computer, we'd have to take it away." What about that idea that, you know, computer time is something that is a reward, not necessarily something that should be there all the time for the student?
As a learning tool, I think with a $20 million investment, you want students to be making the most out of that technology. And so having it sit on a shelf and then only taking it out at times when it's a privilege that's been earned, like a recess privilege or something like that, I think is not effective use of the technology. That's underutilizing it. And so I think it's important for, again, that monitoring of the instructional practices to make sure that the technology is being effectively used. As Jean was talking about, when I was a principal at Mission Valley, we had mobile wireless laptop carts, and so teachers could reserve that. They could use them in their classroom, and there were many effective lessons that were done with those, but it was always in high demand, so you would have to sign up in advance in order to be able to use those laptop carts. So I would love to see that, you know, now that every student has a laptop or an iPad, that they're able to make full use of that within their classrooms.
Now, there are quite a few countries that rank above the United States in a lot of educational tests and markers. Professor Rory, how are they using technology in their classroom?
Well, it varies a lot, but I would say as a rule, probably not as much as the United States. United States basically spends more money on education than most other countries, and this is one aspect of it. So many factors enter into this. It has to do with the culture. It has to do with social expectations. It has to do with inequality. It has to do with poverty, which is very high in this country compared to many others. So those are some of the factors that impact those overall achievement scores more than technology itself, I would say.
Okay, well, we have a full board of callers right now, so let's go to a few of those. Good morning to John in Kansas City.
Yes, this is John, and I apologize for speaking on my speakerphone. I'm in the car. But I think a big area of technology that's being ignored today is the software that connects the students to the device. That's the interactive software that's available that allows students to manage their own trajectory of learning, and how assessment is not being done on an annual or biannual basis, because it's being done every day that the student is undertaking a particular assignment. Could you address that?
Okay. Well, what about John's question about if these being computers and tablets being used to really assess students throughout the year right now?
Well, I think, you know, we live in a digital world right now, and when you think of issues like poverty, a one-to-one initiative gives the opportunity for every student to develop advanced skills working with technology. But there does need to be some self-direction with that so that they are learning to be wise consumers of content that's available for them to learn and to use as research and for their inquiry-based learning. One idea is, if you recall back in the day when we had those film strip projectors and so forth, we used to have an AV club, an audiovisual club, where students would assist the teachers with bringing out the equipment, helping teachers learn how to use it. I think we need an AV club 2.0 where teachers can learn from students, where students can share their expertise and the ways in which they are finding the use of these laptops and iPads to best support their learning, that student voice needs to be a part in the initiative in addition to the plans that the educators have.
And John Rory, earlier you mentioned that, you don't really see computers going anywhere. And what should, in your opinion, the role of a computer in the classroom be?
I think, you know, as people have mentioned, it's an aid to inquiry. It's obviously, you know, for word processing and writing, with books, that can be, and other reading materials can be accessed and carried around more efficiently in that format. I think those are some of the uses. Now, as far as teaching, I mean, a lot depends on student motivation and student focus and discipline. And, you know, the question is, how do teachers foster that in this new environment, particularly when, as learning becomes individualized, which I think is a goal that we all would like to see, how is that process managed? Because Dr. Friend mentioned a minute ago student learning, but of course John Dewey reminds us learning and education are not the same thing necessarily. So how do you get the students to focus on the issues and the skill sets and the types of knowledge that we all agree they should? So those are the big challenges, I think, that face teachers and other educators with this new technology.
Okay, let's go turn to another of our callers who called in at 816-235-2888. Wayne in Mission, Kansas, good morning.
Oh. As a substitute teacher in a district that has deployed those devices, I have found those devices to be distractions. A caller called in earlier talking about making sure that there's maybe a couple teachers or helpers in the room. And if there is an assignment that has to be on the device, I think teachers have to make sure that the kids are not on Facebook, that they're not shopping, that they're not doing what they're, because kids are going to be kids. I think I'm not saying that there's not a need for those devices. However, the structure, and again, I think one of the panelists talked about the motivation of the child. It's just right now, I just kind of have mixed reactions. I know there's a need. I know we have to move those kids forward with regard to technology. It's just how you do that and how you make sure that those devices aren't distractions
and
in the learning process.
Well, thanks for your call, Wayne. Especially for a substitute teacher where they're maybe not there giving the lesson. Jennifer, what would you tell them?
I would say one word, proximity. It's really important to be monitoring how the students are working. And so by observing if the students are engaged in some type of a lesson where they're using the technology, that as a substitute teacher, you've really got to keep an eye on the screens. You've got to see what the students are doing with the technology. And again, if you could become familiar with what types of content is blocked or filtered by the district, then that can also help. And I think that as regular classroom teachers, it's important to see yourself as the guide on the side more than the sage on the stage. So if you're used to standing in the front of the classroom and kind of talking to the students or sitting behind a desk and, you know, while the students are expected to do seat work quietly, that's really not effective. You've really got to be out and about and interacting and observing what the students are doing with the technology.
Okay, and let's go to another caller, Scott in Lawrence. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning. So I have two questions. The first is, what are you doing to use the technology not only to enhance the experience of the students in the classroom, but to help encourage them as lifelong technology users?
Well, I think as lifelong technology users, and an issue we haven't talked about yet with the one-to-one initiative is kind of looking at the difference between the professional and the private. So teachers and students who are going to be having these laptops or iPads, they may have their own Facebook page, personal page, but then they may also have a Facebook page for school where they're going to communicate homework assignments or activities or things where parents and students can access information and share links to outside resources that relate to what they're examining in school. So I think as lifelong learners, we need to understand that we leave a digital footprint and that, you know, and whether it's social media or whether it's the content that we're posting as a result of some project-based or inquiry-based learning, that it's important to critically evaluate and to really be thoughtful and use good judgment about how we are working with technology. Some of those lessons that we have the opportunity to teach students in school then could play into their lifelong learning, because they may naturally be interested in using technology. But as Dr. Rory said, that might be kind of the easy street view of technology. I'm just going to go find a Wikipedia, write this report. And so we really want students to become more critical consumers and thoughtful producers of that content.
And did you have another question, Scott?
I did. As a secondary question, how do you decide, with all the choices out there for technology, how do you decide what platform to standardize on, with Apple being used generally for more creative and personal entertainment uses and Microsoft products being more prevalent in business? How do you decide between a platform to introduce the users to and to kind of set the standard for potentially the, you know, the rest of their lives for, you know, something that they're going to be interested in and learning on? And I'll take the rest of your answer off there. Thanks.
I think a lot of school districts would form a stakeholders committee, so there would be representative voices from parents, from teachers, administrators, community members. And as public schools, they'd want to use those funds wisely, so they'd probably accept bids from different companies. So, different companies would say what types of software and hardware costs and support there would be. Sometimes they might lease the technology versus buying it. So that way, if they do decide Apple now, it doesn't mean that it's always got to be Apple technology, for example. And so I think, having that stakeholder committee and really looking at the track record, Apple computers or MacBook laptops have been in use in a lot of schools over the years. And so there are examples where you could go and you could talk with, for example, Kansas City, Kansas Public Schools, which has been using MacBook laptops in their one-to-one initiative since 2007. So I think, both having community input and looking at the track record and the costs in those bids would all play into the decision.
John Rory, is any of the problem with, different technologies being used in the classroom that they do become outdated sometimes rather quickly? So what a student is learning, maybe when they're in elementary school doesn't apply as much later on in life.
Well, here's the thing, the big issues I think Dr. French has pointed to, which is being really, ultimately it boils down to access to information. That's what the technology is giving us, in addition to the communication, enhanced communication capacities. Those are the sort of two dimensions. And computer technology is at the state now where it's a mature technology. It's not a new technology anymore. So the rate of advance in those two domains is not going to be as fast as it was in the past. The other thing I would say is a lot of these platforms are converging. They speak to each other. They sort of are evolving in step with one another. The Apple versus the Microsoft, and then sort of everybody else revolving around that. So these are, I would say, relatively, they're not inconsequential issues, but in the larger scheme of things, I don't know that a school district has to throw the old lap books out and get new ones every 5 or 6 years. If they continue to perform those functions of communication and information access online, then they're probably fine for the purposes of the schools.
And I've heard you both talk about the importance of good teachers. Are good teachers going to be good teachers regardless of the technology that they have access to?
Well, I think every teacher has the potential to be an effective teacher or a good teacher. And so professional development is really key. So that the teachers are prepared to effectively integrate technology into their instruction.
And John, what's your thoughts on that?
Well, the essence of the teacher is multidimensional. One of it is motivation, having a connection with students where they respond and they feel responsible to the teacher. And, that translates over to the use of technology as well. And the other is knowledge. So having knowledge of the subject and having knowledge, what Lee Shulman calls pedagogical content knowledge, in this instance, having that sort of technology dimension of that. How does this technology serve the disciplinary domain that my class is mastering? So I think that today's good teachers as they think about technology, you know, the things that make them good teachers now will definitely make them good teachers with technology in the future.
And Jennifer Friend, this is kind of your area of expertise. What would you tell the Shawnee Mission District, you know, just as they're going forward into this project?
Well, again, I would say to be certain that they've got a vision for this one-to-one initiative, that they've got a plan in place that will offer adequate and ongoing professional development for the teachers, and that they are able to evaluate the effectiveness of the initiative as it moves along.
Well, that wraps up our time for this segment. I would like to thank both Jennifer Friend from UMKC and John Rury from KU for talking to me about this subject, and we'll be coming back on Central Standard in just a few minutes.